Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This week, our topic is going to be about fear. So I wanted to segue into that topic with a comment that was posted on our main website, taketheredpillpodcast.com. This comment was posted by Laurent. I really want to thank you, Laurent, for posting this comment. And he says here, a stray thought about the Power Podcast. Both of you started with the idea that we have power in the first place, which can be given away or hijacked. My observation is that we have a very narrow range in which we make decisions, mostly coerced by our own fears and desires. Real power is being able to make decisions in our best interest, regardless of our greed and anxiety. Thank you once again, Laurent, for posting that.
Definitely. Thank you, Laurent.
That is a perfect setup for the conversation about fear that we're going to have today. So Donald, why don't you talk about your take on what Laurent said here in the comments on the website?
I think he nailed it on the idea on the head, because, you know, when we were talking about power, you know, we were definitely coming from a place of the power that we're able to perceive and understand that we have, and, you know, what other people are able to perceive what we have. He takes it to it from a kind of a different perspective, saying, well, let's not look at how much power we have from what we can see that we have. Let's actually see how much we actually have in general. Mm-hmm. He brought in all these ideas about our fears and desires definitely having an effect on how much power, personal power, we have, and our interactions with other people and other people's personal power and how they interact with us. Mm-hmm. And I agree completely with the idea that fears truly do keep us from experiencing things that we probably would want to but might not. So yeah, they can keep us from experiencing life to the fullest.
Interesting. Well, I think that's interesting is because I'm going to just kind of try to stretch this, you know, as I like to do in these things. Now, based on what you said and also based on Laurent's comment here is that, you know, he says that our decisions are coerced by our fears and desires. And you're saying that our personal power is what I hear you saying is that our personal power is often compromised by our own fears, and that can limit us, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if our fear is our experience? You know, I say this because I'm part of a forum called Soul Development Forum.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned it before. What I did was I kind of started a workshop on examining fear. And one of the people in the workshop said, you know, maybe our fears are really well designed to teach us things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we make these decisions based on fear and we learn from. They were basically taking the position that fear is healthy and can be healthy. So what would you say about that, about the function of fear?
See, that's one of the things where fear is good, but only to a point. If we go back to caveman times or whatever, where, you know, you're walking through the jungle or the fields or whatever, or the mountains or whatever, and, you know, all of a sudden you see this really big mountain lion, yeah, you're going to be afraid because that your personal safety could be compromised and your life could end and that would be bad. And, you know, you can extend that to, you know, all other manners of personal safety and stuff of that nature. What I'm referring to more specifically is where you have an experience, it creates some kind of a fear in you. It's a traumatic event from that point on in your life. Whenever you have to do that or something like that, like let's take flying in a plane from place to place. Let's say the first time you ever flew, you were like 4 or 5 years old, and it was just a horrendous experience for you. Your ears popping on takeoff and landing was very uncomfortable, and it stuck in your psyche. It could possibly end up being one of those things where flying is just one of those things that you really fear, and then your conscious mind starts making all these things like, well, I don't understand how something that's so, you know, big piece of metal actually is able to be in the air and everything, and I've looked over the physics and everything, and I'm not a scientist, so that doesn't really make sense to me and everything. And at that point, that's when fears start hindering you instead of helping you. So it is kind of a double-edged sword where, to some degree, they are helpful in keeping us protected, but in other areas, they can hold us back and keep us from experiencing our life.
And where do you draw that line? In other words, where does it go from being helpful to being a hindrance?
I think it goes to a place where the line is drawn where if there's something you want to do that could possibly have a positive impact on your life, or just something that you want to do in general, and you have a fear about it and it doesn't endanger your life or the lives of other people, then that's one side of the line. And then the other side of the line is if it does endanger your life or the life of other people, it's probably on that other area. And I know there are so many examples where it's like, well, okay, let's take bungee jumping, for example. You know, that endangers your life, but that also endangers, if you go with a group of people, you could say, hey, we're all going bungee jumping. I don't know. Now you got me all kinds of thinking about, you know, exactly. I see where you brought this question up. It's a really good one. It's a really good one. Because it is so easy to back yourself into a wall with that.
Well, you know, I think it's a, you're right. It is easy to back yourself into a wall, because one argument could be, well, yeah, you know, it's a natural fear of bungee jumping. You know, there could be a potential of not being harnessed incorrectly and, you know, hitting the water at a speed which feels like concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of things that you could go into play there. The way I tend to look at fear and how we operate in fear is there a clear and present danger or is there not? And I say that, is your fear based on the here and now and the moment and the very moment that you're in? Or is the fear based on, like you'd mentioned before, a past event that may have caused you some trauma or been traumatic, or a future event where, like, on the forum, one of the things that a person said is they're over and over again, I'm afraid of something bad happening to my children.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people would say, well, whoa, man, don't say that. That's ridiculous. That's a legitimate fear.
Mm-hmm.
So then what we're breaking down here is when is it an irrational fear and when is it irrational? Is it it's not an irrational fear to say, you know what, I want to make sure that there's an adult walking with my child to the bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that there is a responsible person that I know and trust that gets them from point A to point B safely. I want to make sure that they learn to look both ways before crossing the street. Irrational? You know, my child can never go outside on a rainy day, you know, or ever. Or my child cannot be, you know, carry a balloon because I don't know, you know.
So is there an actual definition difference between the word fear and the word concern? Because what you just described with, you know, a parent wanting to have their children escorted to the bus stop sounds more like concern to me instead of fear.
Ah, you know what? That's a really good point. And I'm gonna answer that by defining what I consider fear.
Okay.
Fear is a reaction based on an impulse. Then the logic kind of gets stripped out of it. Well, let's play with this a little bit. Let's start by saying, when I talked about a clear and present danger, like you said, if there was a mountain lion coming up to you and you're out and about, fear is going to make you run or do whatever, fight or flight or freeze or whatever it is, you know? And you're not thinking about it. You're not like, oh, there's a mountain lion. I think I should start to move my legs in this direction. You're like, you're not thinking about it. Then there's the other side of fear, like I'm afraid of getting on an airplane because statistically, you know, there's this big thing in the sky. You know, what is that fear based on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've never been on, if you've never been in an airplane crash, it's not a logical fear. It's even more illogical when you think your chances of dying in a car accident are astronomically higher than they are dying in a plane crash. So those are illogical fears. So I think it's like when you start looking at, you know, is your fear based on anything tangible? If there's a clear and present danger, it's a tangible fear. But if it's a fear that you don't really have any grounds for having that fear, it's a bunch of, well, this might happen or this might happen or this might happen, then to me, they're a little bit less logical. Now, when you're talking about concern, it's saying, you know, I'm going to make some rational decisions based on these probabilities, and then I'm going to let trust go from here.
Where do people get irrational fears from? Is imagination? Is it just stories that they hear of other people and they feel empathy for them? Or where do these irrational fears come from?
That's a really good question. You know what, Donald? You'd asked a really good question, because I think that really drills down to what I would consider the pathology of a lot of Western society, because we're very fear-based. We're extremely fear-based. And people say, well, yeah, of course, there's 9/11 concerns of attacks, and there's people that have ill intentions toward your children, and there's people that want to mug you and rob you, blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the tiny fears, the little everyday fears, you know? Well, I can't look for a better job because I can't leave this job. I hate this job, but I can't leave it because I'll never get a better job. I'm not qualified for a better job. So there's fear of failure. There's fear of not being accepted by other people. There's fear of being judged. There's fear of being criticized. Those are all what I call the bite-sized fears that seem to infect us really deeply.
Are you still there?
No, sure am. I just all of a sudden just stopped my statement. I fell off the... It's like I fell off the
plane. Yeah, it's not like you just stopped mid-sentence.
I did, because I mean, I almost like I made my point to an extreme there. I was like, I guess I'm done. I'll just stop talking now.
So if we have those fears, you say they come from more of a cultural thing. So do you believe other cultures have different fears, or would they have the same thing?
You know, I think a fear is a fear is a fear. I don't really think it matters what the fears are. So other cultures, I think the source of those bite-sized fears and those irrational fears is on how one views the self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have trust in yourself and you're not, and you know that really ultimately the worst thing you could lose is your own life, if you know basically what's life-threatening and what's not, and then you also know that eventually one day you're going to die anyway,
mm-hmm.
not to be foolhardy, not to rush in where angels fear to tread, but more so to say, all right, you know what? How about a leap of faith here? You know, I'm going to be okay on the other side. And I think a lot of people are just so afraid because they're afraid of failing and they're afraid of being judged, because the love of self and the appreciation of self and really believing in oneself is at a lack.
I like what you're saying there, because you talk to people, there is a fear of success, there's a fear of failure, and then there's a fear of bodily harm. And one of the things that I've come to learn myself with life is risky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, my perception on one of the areas where fears come from is people's idea of the level of risk of what they're willing to do. Mm-hmm. It's like if you go into a casino or you make a bet with somebody, you know, offhandedly, then, you know, for $5, that's not too risky. It's like, okay, $5, not a problem. If you make $50,000 a year and you make a bet for $10,000, just on one hand of, let's say, blackjack or one spin of the wheel, that's much more riskier, and that can be much more fearful, because that would completely affect your livelihood from that point on. I think the irrational fears come from where it goes into a little bit of psychology, where it's easier to stay where you are and where you know how things operate and where you're comfortable than to take that risk, no matter how big or small it is, of something that you consciously realize that you want that's better and actually go for it, you know, kind of like.
But is it easier? And I ask that because there'll be people that'll tell you time and time again, oh, you know, I got fired from my job and it was the best thing that ever happened to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, but usually interestingly enough, in almost all those cases, when you talk to somebody that got fired from their job, it wasn't their dream job.
Mm-hmm.
It was a job that really they were biding time at that they didn't really like. It was comfortable to stay in that job, but they had to get pushed to almost a physical point to where they left. Is it easier, or is it just habit, to go through a grind, to go through and live through a situation that is extremely uncomfortable? Let's take people who are abused
mm-hmm.
by a spouse. They're abused by their spouse. You know, I don't care if it's physical or verbal. It's abuse as mm-hmm. far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they stay there because of their own fears. Now, is that easier? That's not an easy life.
It's easier because you know what to expect, but I don't want to confuse the word easy with comfortable, because once you start interchanging those words, then it becomes very difficult. But, you know, it's easier to stay in a place where you know what to expect on a regular basis than to go for something that you don't know.
So fear of the unknown, it sounds like that's one of the biggest fears we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that? Why is the unknown so scary?
Because anything can happen. It's like a roll of a dice, you know. It could turn very negative for us, or it could turn very positive for us. It's one of those things where if you're not able to have any idea of what the outcome is going to be, then to your mind and your subconscious and your emotions, anything could happen. And most people don't want to have negative stuff happen, so they're more hedonistic and they go for, you know, the known. And if you stay in a place where you know what's happening, then at least you know what's happening and you're able to think about it ahead of time and work towards, you know, setting yourself up and getting ready for whatever's happening. Whereas the unknown, you don't know.
Are you talking about controlling your environment?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Controlling your environment, controlling your life. You've heard stories in the past like 20 years or so, these individuals who had these high-paying executive jobs for like a Fortune 500 company, they'd been there for years and they worked their way up the corporate ladder, and then for whatever reason they're just like, you know, this is not working for me anymore, and they just quit. Mm-hmm. And then they go off and they do something else that's more in line with their passion, more in line with who they are and what they actually enjoy. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, if you're making corporate executive money, that's a sense of, oh, if I have this, then I'm much more well off than anyone that's making less than I am. To have the confidence to go and say, you know what, I'm fine, I'll be fine no matter what, because I have faith in my ability, I believe I know how to make things work one way or another, because I'm smart enough and I can handle the ups and downs and pitfalls, and I would not have become an executive if I wasn't able to do that. Whereas somebody who might be working a $20,000 or $30,000 job where you're living paycheck to paycheck, the amount of confidence, the amount of power, you know, going back to the power episode, that you would need to have to make the same move as the executive is much, much, much different, because you have no idea if you'll be eating in 6 months or not.
I don't know if I would agree with that. The part I don't know if I would agree with is about the executives, because it seems that the story of the executives, the stories I hear don't seem to be that they have the confidence to quit it all and follow their dreams. It's more that they see they're not living their dreams and they're miserable. Even though they're making all this money and all this stuff, they realize that it's not the dollar that they're pulling in that's making them happy. In fact, they're very unhappy because they see their dream slipping away from them, and this executive position doesn't fit within that dream. So they get to the point where, you know, they've stayed. In fact, they always said, you know what, I thought this was my whole life. I had thought, you know, what else am I going to do? I need to keep doing this. I need to keep excelling. And I get to a plateau and I realize there's really nothing else. There's nowhere else to go. Their fear had kept them from leaving that kind of lifestyle because they didn't know what else they could do. They had defined themselves by that role. So their fear was that their own definition of self was going to collapse. And that's probably one of the hugest fears that people have.
And you don't think anyone at any income level would have the similar fears and feelings?
I think that anybody at any income level would have similar fears and feelings. I think the fears are completely separate about income. I think income hardly ever has anything to do with it.
And that's kind of where I was going with your description of how the executive was feeling, where, you know, they'd reached the top and it's like, okay, life, I'm not excited anymore and I don't really see where else to go from here. That sounds like people that can be at any income level. What I was referring to earlier is the amount of fear that is needed to overcome from the corporate executive's point of view would probably be much more different than the fear that would need to be overcome from, say, someone who makes $20,000 to $30,000 a year, this point of view, because it has to do with their personal power. It goes going back to the whole power episode.
Let's say this:
okay,
if you're a personal executive pulling in, you know, six figures a year, or excuse me, personal executive, are there such things? And it's like a little shaving kit you buy at Target or something like that. The personal executive, but
now at Walmart for roll bay prices. It was $25,000. Now it's just $299.
That's a steal.
You don't know the half of it. We're getting personal executives from China. I mean, Uruguay. I mean, sorry.
No, that's all right.
Couldn't resist.
What I was saying about the personal executives and their fear, you know, if you're when you mentioned risk, if you're not making any money, if you make $10,000 a year, going from $10,000 to nothing when you could barely live on that, you're almost at the point where I've got nothing to lose because I don't really have much to begin with. Where if you're pulling in six figures and you say, I got to walk away from this to become a painter, oh, I've got six figures to lose. I've got, you know, yacht, or not yachts, but boat payments and, you know, my McMansion payments and all this other stuff. I have all that to lose.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, if you've gotten to that point, you would realize that what is important to me. If you're if you're an executive and you get to a point of like, what is important to me, what is important to my family, if you have a family or if you're single or whatever, then it's like, do I really need this big of a house? Can we actually be happy being in a smaller house or the payment isn't so much? You can have a little bit more leeway with that, whereas if you're making $10,000 a year, it's like, well, I can live in an apartment, but if I'm not able to make rent, I'll be living on in my car, or if I don't have a car, I'll be living on the street. That's where I think there's a little disconnect there, or at least from my perception, where the $10,000 worker, you know, I don't think they're saying I make so little I don't have anything left to lose. I'm like, I think they're looking at it more from a point of view as I only make so much and, you know, my life is not happy right now. If that goes down, my life gets worse, and that's something I don't think I can handle. Whereas the executive would be having that be more of a choice-driven thing, where it's just like, okay, we're downgrading, so we'll change everything up so that we can afford our new lifestyle for the income that will be coming in, as opposed to what it's been already.
You're saying that the fear of walking away from your certain living condition is contingent on, you know, how well you can survive through that living condition?
I think it's dependent on how well you think or how well you believe in yourself that you'll be able to live through that condition. And what you're willing to do to make it work. For example, if you're making $10,000 a year and you really want to follow your dream of, I don't know, cutting nose hairs.
Mm-hmm.
Not what a lot of people want to do, but let's say that's your
dream. You are easy, buddy, because if you start... you know, talking mess on nose hair cutters.
Yeah, but...
You're going to demoralize me, and I'm going to have to pick a different aspiration.
Yeah, but if you have no idea how much you're going to be making because you have to build up your client base and whatnot, you don't even know if there's really a market for people or if people would actually... go to you to have you do their nose hairs as opposed to the way they've always done it with themselves, what would you be willing to risk if that was your passion to make that happen? It comes down to a point, if you're living in an apartment, would you be willing to live in a car? If you don't have a car, would you be willing to live in a shelter to make this happen?
There's a proportion, I think. I think the greater the passion, the more you'd be willing to do it.
Exactly. But a lot of people don't have the passion or the motivation to overcome their fear of where to go because they don't even know if that's where they really want to be. Most people, where they've ended up is through choices of where they thought they wanted to be, like 6 months to a few years back, and they followed on this path, and then it's like, well, I thought I wanted to be here and now I don't, and now if I go and, you know, try and do something else, what's to say I'm going to want to be there in a few years, and then I'm going to put myself through all the discomfort to see if, you know, find where I really want to be, and, you know, go through complete lack of income. You know, people's minds start getting in that area. That's where the idea of risk really starts piling up enormously quickly and fast.
Well, you know, the thing about that though is people think they have a lot more to lose than they do.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And people, I think, always forget what they can survive. You know, it may have sucked, but they could survive it. And also people are like, well, you always think of the failure as the worst thing that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
When really, most of the time, is only failure if you call it failure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an event that happens, and you take the perspective on what you think of that event. If you try to start a business, and the business crashes and burns... where did that lead you, and what did you get out of it? What did you learn from it? If you learned something from it and you took something from it, it was not a failure. And you could do that with any situation, period.
Exactly. And that's why I think fear is so symbiotically tied to power, from power to confidence. And, you know, if you look at the world in a certain way, in a more of a confident way, you will learn lessons that you wouldn't have learned if you were looking at it in a negative way. Like what you, the example you said, you're out there, you start your business, it goes belly up. You know, what do you take from that? It depends on your attitude and your perception. If you look at it with more of a confidence, it's like, okay, this didn't work. And why didn't it work? You might be able to look at it more objectively. Whereas if you look at it more negatively, like, well, I guess I'm just not a business person. I don't know how to do this, and I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it creates a whole new attitude, and it's one more thing you can mark off the list of anything you can do in life. We're like, well, I can't run a register or be a manager of a business because I wasn't able to have a successful business. It's like, okay, so what areas of life does that and jobs does that take you out of in your mind right then and there? Mm-hmm. That takes you out of tons and tons of areas. Whereas if you look at it from a more confident point of view, it's like, well, you know what? I did this right. I researched this before I did it. I talked to a business consultant. I talked to this person. I had a CPA. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I was innovative. I had diversity in what I was offering for products, and it still didn't work. You can say, okay, you know, maybe it just wasn't time. Maybe this is just an area I'm not supposed to be in. Or maybe it's just one of those things that I wasn't supposed to do right now, or maybe not even right here. Maybe I could do it again and start it off a little bit differently, or maybe your interests are changing and you start going in a completely different direction,
right,
taking what you learned from that whole experience, mm-hmm, and applying it to some other area.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's the complete difference between having fear of doing something again because of past experiences, or, you know, what your mind can conceive of possible risks, and actually, you know, just trying it out, having a different attitude or perception. It's like, you know, it's like Edison with the light bulb.
Right.
He's quoted as saying, so how do you feel about the light bulb? And it's like, well, I failed 1,500 times.
Right.
I got the last one I got right.
Yeah, yeah. There was a crazy number of times that he tried to make that thing. I think the opportune word in that is yet. Because I used to tell myself, you know, it's like when you actually stop deciding to do it, that's when you could say you fail. Or like you said just a moment ago, it could be because you've discovered that that's not where your interests lie. Mm-hmm. It could be that, well, I was doing this, and through doing this process, I realized that it was not a good fit for me. It led me to this other path, which now I've discovered was a good fit. But like with you, Evan, when you went to school to go, when you were looking at going into, was it computer networking?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then you realized through going through that process that it was not a good fit.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if I was one of these people that looked at it from, oh, computers, you know, I know a little bit about computers, but I'm really good at making it look like I know more about computers than I really do. I know how much I don't know, and that's stuff that I just don't understand because I've looked at it a little bit on my own, just trying to learn it on my own, and it's all Greek to me. It makes no sense, and now I'm going to put myself in a place where I have to be graded, and I'm going to have people knowing that I don't know as much as I know, and I get a payoff for that because, you know, sometimes family members say, hey, I'm having a problem with this, or friends say, hey, I'm having a problem with this computer, and, you know, it's not working.
Is this what you went through?
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is a way I could have gone. This is a perception that I could have had. You know, 10 years ago, I did tech support for a few applications through a company that I was working with at the time. It would be basically, oh, your computer's doing this. We know what happens with that. That is a operating system issue, or that is a software application issue. Starting from there and going down, you know, you figure out very quickly where to go. From that to, you know, where I found myself now, where things have changed so much and I haven't kept up with it. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, people would call me up, and I was their free tech support because that was what I did, you know, professionally.
A lot of people do that too. They say, "Well, you know, it's what I've always done, so it's the only thing I can do." And there's a lot of people that will not change into a different venue, because I mean, I know people who I know someone who is an attorney, and they said, you know, I wouldn't mind being an English teacher. The thing is I'm already vested. I've already spent this much on law school, and you know, I have a child, a new, very, very young child, and all these things. And I'm like, wow, you know, and you're really not loving what you do. No, not really, but you know, I have a job and I'm happy for that. You know?
It's a paycheck.
It's a paycheck. And you know, in some people's cases, there are some people that are so happy to have a job that, you know, what they're doing is fine. But you know, there's always a next stage that you can go to if you just leave yourself open and accept that anything can be yours. You know, the only thing you have to do is just go.
Yeah, you're talking about becoming complacent.
Yeah, that's part of it. But complacency, I think, a lot of time is based on fear. Like you said, fear of change, fear of the unknown, and also fear of failure.
I don't know if I'd go that far, David.
What?
I don't know if I'd say that about complacency or becoming static, because I could see so many possibilities where there would be people that if they have a job and they have a family, their focus is not so much on their job, but their pride comes from being able to provide for their family.
That's not complacency, though.
But the next part I'm saying is, even if they don't like their job, you know, they could do something else that they are more interested in. They're like, you know, my life is pretty good right now. You know, all the bills are paid. I have good credit. We're able to do good Christmas presents. We're able to do take a vacation every year. I don't hate my job. I don't love it, but it's, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a very good point, and I will give that to you. However, what you were saying there is that they say their life is good. If you are at a job and you believe that because you're at an unfulfilling job that your life is not good, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, okay.
See, complacency to me is a surrendering to your fate. And what that person that you described, that's not complacent to me. What that is my passion is providing everything I can for my family. You know, I was talking to a custodian, and he's got one of his kids working for the VA and kind of does some important stuff there. Another one of his kids has a double major and is graduating early with a double major, you know, one in like and some kind of engineering, crazy engineering, I don't remember what it is, structural. And the other one was political science. I'm like, what are you kidding me? But he spoke with such pride at this, you know, and that's what his life was, is having his kids turn out this way. That makes the days fine. I don't like getting up to an alarm. I really don't. I can't stand having to get up that early and having to go to bed that early to do my job, but I really love what I do. So you know what? It's small potatoes to me.
Yeah, and that's what I thought that you were talking about in your example, where having a life where, you know, they'd come to a point where they were okay with everything, not overly happy with every area, but okay with it, and basically saying, you know, everything's okay. I'm not going to move one way or another because it might disrupt the balance that we're currently at. And if we do disrupt the balance, then who knows what happens? And that balance could be just as easy from, you know, what you said, a friend going from an attorney to an English teacher. That would disrupt that balance a little bit. And it's like, everything's comfortably good right here. And we don't want to jostle that in any way, shape, or form. That's what I thought you were talking about, is fear of making any move and tipping the boat over, as opposed to being happy where the boat is and enjoying the scenery and the experience in and of itself.
To me, it's all about looking forward to the next day. You know, if you look forward to the next day, there was a point in my life where I was, you know, I wanted to control my own environment a lot. You know, I was getting kind of obsessive compulsive about little things, and I didn't like the surprise of, you know, oh, this is going to happen this weekend. That's not what I planned. And my whole world would turn upside down. Mm-hmm. But that was a symptom. You know, I wasn't crazy about where my life was. So I was trying to control this outcome of it turning out the way I wanted to. Mm. Now I'm like, I welcome surprises, you know, because, you know, it keeps things interesting and I'm not bored. And, you know, I'm looking forward to what happens next. It may come out the way I want, it may not. But if it doesn't come out the way I want, I'll take something from that and figure out the next round on how I'm going to approach it.
I have to agree with you. It's really cool to have an idea of what's going to happen, but surprises are like the spice of life. And I know that you and I were on a question and answer panel a little while ago. We didn't really have any real agenda or format other than we are your Google for the next for the next little while. You know, give us a question, we'll give you an answer from our combined knowledge and whatnot. I think you feel the same way, but some of the topics that came up and some of the ideas and some of the concepts that came up from that in that 2 hours was absolutely awesome.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It was a very, very exciting conversation and experience, not only for having to have that information there available for, you know, whatever question was asked, but also, you know, what the other people took from that and what they sharing their perceptions of how they see the world and everything. Mm-hmm. And I look at that too, where it's kind of nice to have that kind of like, okay, we're going to have a stadium and we're going to have a two teams get together and we'll decide what game they play then. Imagine you have not necessarily professional athletes but just 30 people show up and be like, we're going to show up at this stadium. We're going to split you all up into, you know, two groups. We're going to roll a dice. We have this list set up of, you know, 1 through 6 of, you know, if it lands on a 1, we're playing football. If it lands on a 2, we're playing basketball. If it lands on a 3, we're doing baseball. If it, you know, lands on a 4, we're doing volleyball. Where you never know exactly what you're going to be doing when you actually get there, that kind of can be kind of exciting.
It can be exciting. What's interesting is, like, when you talked about, remember you made the analogy about the gambling?
Oh, yeah.
And the risk involved. Gambling is fun for a lot of people, even though they know that the odds are is they're going to lose their money. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that, interestingly, that there's people who just don't like to gamble. They're like, I know that I'm going to lose my money, and they don't. But there are people who love to gamble. And I'm not talking about the addicts, the people addicted to gambling. I'm talking about the people who go to Vegas every now and then, and they just, you know, go down there with a large fortune and come back with a small fortune.
You're talking from personal experience?
You know, I'm not a big gambler, but I like to do it sometimes. But, you know, it's that unknown element. It's that thrill and not knowing what's going to happen. You know, it's that all taking a chance. But the thing is I only play games that I think are fun to play.
Oh, yeah.
I don't play games with the best odds necessarily because I don't find them as enjoyable. The thing is when you're wanting to take a risk, when you're wanting to go out there and just kind of let the chips fall as they may, I think when you are doing what you enjoy doing and you're passionate about what you're enjoying doing, then you know that it's part of the process. It may come out the way you want, it may not. Anybody who's been in a creative endeavor, anybody who's written anything has thrown away stuff they've written. Anybody who's written music has trashed songs that they've come up with. Anybody who's played a sport has lost a game. Mm-hmm. But all those things didn't stop you from doing it. But yet there are people who their fears are saying, you know, what if I lose the game? And what if I write something that is terrible? Well, what if you do?
Yeah.
You know, what if I go apply for a job of my dreams and I don't get it? Well, you can apply for another one. People let themselves get stopped at their fear because they say, well, if I do this, the result that I'm hoping doesn't happen could happen, and I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, when you were talking, I was thinking about, what if you have always loved ice cream? You don't just like ice cream. It's almost an obsession for you. You apply to some big ice cream company, you know, working at the headquarters of the factory, and your job description throughout is going to be a little bit of taste testing, a little bit of coming up and creating with new flavors and stuff like this, you know, a little bit of, you know, market research. And so, you know, it's not going to be a boring job in any way, shape, or form, except it requires 10% of public speaking to shareholders and investors and stuff like that. And your fear, you have an overriding fear of public speaking. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, might go for it, get in the job, and try to get out of the public speaking part as best they can. And other people, you know, they won't even get that far. They'd be like, oh, public speaking, I can't do that. I think that leads to another idea of, with fear, how do we overcome our fears?
Let's use your ice cream making as an example. And
Fred
they go to
McMurtleberry, that's the job
Fred
he got.
McMurtleberry, yeah.
Fred McMurtleberry.
Let's say that Fred McMurtleberry went to going for the ice cream job, and his passion was ice cream. And then he had to do this public speaking, right? Mm-hmm. And he had a fear of public speaking. One of the things he could do is he could say, well, you know, I need to figure out how to face my fear and take some public speaking classes and go through it trembling all the while and realize that it's not that bad. Or could go through the public speaking and say, oh, I cannot stand this. So then what happens? He could say, you know what, if I take a public speaking class and find out that I can't get through this, or I took one in college and I couldn't get through it, should he walk away and say ice cream is no good? Why doesn't he make his own ice cream? He could be passionate about dealing with ice cream that never has to do with public speaking. So it's imposing those limits. I mean, to me, it's like when you all of a sudden see your wall, don't turn around. Just figure out how are you going to go around a wall. Every wall, it has an end, you know. The Great Wall of China eventually ends somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I just remembered when we actually created Fred McMurtleberry, one of the examples that we had with him in the Law of Attraction episode had him going out for ice cream.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that actually connects really perfectly with him having this overwhelming passion for ice cream.
Well, you know, the passion is its own fuel.
Oh, yeah.
To answer your question, how do you go around fears? Well, first of all, if you're up against a fear, it's because there's usually a passion holding hands with the fear somewhere, you know, or the fear is holding hands with passion somewhere. Oh, yeah. The reason I say that is because a fear doesn't come up unless you're like, oh, I want to go into the woods. Well, there may be lions in the woods. Well, you wanted to go into the woods. That's where you started from, right? Mm-hmm. And then a fear is what kicked in from wanting to do something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you're starting from a point of wanting to do something. One of the best ways around your fear is to just go into your mind and go into your imagination and let yourself feel as in as much detail and as much richness the experience in your imagination of going through what you're going through without that thing happening, without the lion happening. Or if the lion does come, you know, you let that come up in your mind, but don't all of a sudden wake up here and go, oh God, I need to go get a pop now. You know, just say, all right, I've escaped the lion. You imagine escaping the lion. You imagine triumphing of, you know, escaping the lion. Whatever it is, you go through that experience in your mind. And more importantly, you go through the feeling that it gives you when you go through the feeling and you say, okay, this is making the ice cream, you know, I'm creating ice cream. It's making me feel joy. And when I feel joyful, this is what it makes me feel. And this is how it makes me feel about who I am. So you just live that experience in your mind. And then you know what? You do that enough, often enough, you get a craving so much for it. You say, I know there's a fear. I got to face it. Mm-hmm. And you face it. And that doesn't mean you're any less afraid, but you don't let the fear, just like Lawrence said in the comment, you're not letting the fear make the choice for you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there you can't get away from fears. We're full of fears in our life. It's just a matter of not letting that fear be the choice maker.
Yeah, and there's some fears that most people overcome all the time, and there are others, depending on the individual, that you know they can hold on to forever and ever. I love that Lawrence comment where, you know, he actually says, how much power do we really have? As opposed to focusing on giving away and having our power taken away. I still love that take on it. Mm-hmm. And I believe, from my perception, we do have a lot of power to begin with. Or maybe a better way to put it is, we have an ample amount of power to create certain changes in our life that lead to a more positive, more fulfilling life experience.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
From that point, I think going back to the power episode, with all the information that we and the examples that we gave in that episode, being able to overcome fear is, at that level, much more of an attitude thing. Much more of, are you going to give up and go somewhere else? Or are you going to find a way to make it work? Mm-hmm. That's one of the quotes that I came up with. And I actually did a fair amount of searching to make sure that I wasn't, you know, plagiarizing it. And when I came up with the quote, it was just, I was just like, really, no one's ever come up with this one before. Anyway, the quote is basically, stop thinking of reasons why you can't and start thinking of ways that you can. Mm-hmm. For me, that's just helped me, you know, enormously with coming over obstacles where it's just like, oh, you know, I don't know if that's a good thing for me or not. And like, I don't know if you saw that movie, Yes Man with Jim Carrey. Mm-mm. Yeah, basically he says no all the time, and he goes to he ends up in this motivational seminar, and the guy says, say yes to everything, and so he does. The one thing that I pulled away from that movie that I thought was just really interesting is if you say yes to more things out of a sense of, you know, I always say no to this, or I always say no to that, and if I say yes, then you don't know what kind of experience you're going to have. If your attitude and your perception is, I'm going to hate it, then you're probably not going to enjoy it. If you go at it with more of a, I have no idea what's going to happen, and I'm digging this example. And I think that's kind of what the rush that you're talking about, where you have a fear, you recognize that you have a fear, and then you do it anyway. And then you realize, oh, I'm still okay.
Right.
I was scared. I did not let it stop me. And this kind of rush of adrenaline was really fun. And now this afterglow effect of, oh my goodness, I'm still safe and I'm still here. This is kind of cool. And I think people, once they start doing that, that's one way that they start overcoming more and more fears. And like, you know, I'm afraid of skydiving. Well, I guess we're skydiving then.
Barbara Streisand throws up before every concert.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Imagine if she just was like, oh, you know, she throws up and says, well, I can't do this. She goes right through it. She knows, I know this is just a fear. I know this is in my head. And then, yeah, she bangs out a show that makes people pass out and scream and whatever else, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there we are.
Yeah, completely. And I don't have anything else to add to that. I'm pretty much tapped.
Oh, okay.
So is there anything that you'd like to add?
I think we've said pretty much the lion's share of it all, which is that, you know, fear, it's not about getting rid of your fear. It's just about, you know, acknowledging the fear and still moving through it. I think if we follow the fear back and find your value of self where it's low, you know, you can raise that back up, and you will have enough power to be able to push through those fears.
Nicely said. Well, before we go, I'd like to thank all of our listeners that have listened to every one of our episodes. Like we've said in the past, this is a passion for David and I, and we really enjoy it. And if this is the first episode that you're listening to, hopefully you've enjoyed it as well. And check us out on iTunes or TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com for a list of all of our episodes. We would also like to take this opportunity to thank our transcriptionist, Kathy Wells at Focus Scripts, Inc., for the transcribing of our episodes, which can be found through a link on our website. So for Take the Red Pill Podcast, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you the strength to face your fear.
And this is David Deere. Don't be scared.